All right, and we are back with Lionel Bopage. Sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but yeah.
Yeah, so I'll just introduce you, Lionel. So Lionel's a human rights political activist, a one-time central leader of the Sri Lankan People's Liberation Front, and today Lionel lives in Australia and continues to be an outspoken defender of human rights and social justice. And yeah, Lionel joins us now to talk about what's happening in Sri Lanka. So thank you for being on the show, Lionel. You're speaking with me, Chloe, and also Ari.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to speak about the situation in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, thank you. Lionel, the government of Sri Lanka has now declared a state of emergency in response to a wave of protests. And correct me if I'm wrong, Lionel, there's been, you know, very little coverage about this in the mainstream media, even though it's probably the biggest economic crisis in the history of Sri Lanka or known history. And it looks like it's getting worse. So can you please give us a bit of background of what led to the protests?
Thank you. As you correctly explained, the crisis situation is unprecedented in the recent history of Sri Lanka. Country is almost bankrupt. I think it is already there. And it is due to the result of long-term structural issues that have been prevalent in Sri Lanka for a long, long time. And it is struggling to service its debt. I think it is ballooning around $51 billion. And now, the issue is, even now, still, the government is going on mismanaging the whole situation, because until recently, the governor of Central Bank was an accountant who didn't have any understanding with regard to economics. And I heard that day before yesterday, the government printed 119 billion rupees. Now we don't have a finance minister. There is no chief of central bank, and there is no finance secretary. But at the same time, the government is continuing to print and roll out money, and it causes heavy inflation in Sri Lanka. And the situation is that the people are facing unprecedented shortages of fuel, food, electricity, cooking gas, medication, and they have issues with education. They can't hold exams because they don't have money. I mean, the government doesn't have money to buy paper, and there are problems about transport. Several people died while waiting in queues to collect cooking gas. So the crisis has been exacerbating for a long time. It is due to government mismanagement, years of accumulated borrowing, and as soon as this government came to power, they gave a tax cut to the biggest companies in Sri Lanka, and that created a huge problem economically and financially. So that is the situation, and because of this scarcity, people find it very difficult to survive, and that is what led to these protests.
Thanks, Lionel. Thanks for giving us a bit of a background of what led to the protests. And you know, we've been watching how people have been protesting in the street. Would you be able to just be able to tell us how big these protests are? You know, how widespread are they? And you know, what are people demanding?
It is right across the island, I would say. Now, as you know, our population is quite similar to that of Australia. We have about 22 million people. And despite the declaration of emergency, as you stated at the very start of this interview, the protests have been going everywhere. And I think today, tomorrow, and on the 10th of April, there are going to be huge protests in Sri Lanka. And what happens is that there is sort of an imbalance, I would say, in terms of the spread of the protest, because the focus or mainly the protests are concentrated in the south of Sri Lanka, and in the north and east, there are protests, but in a very minor scale. I think that is not because the Tamil-speaking people are pro-Rajapaksa. They are against. They want this government to go, but they are hesitant because of what happened to them. And even now, the North and East is under military occupation. Like, you know, sort of there are checkpoints, there is military presence, and there are issues have been addressed. There are people are still in prison under the Prevention of Terrorism Act. Their land issues are not settled. So all these problems. But the issue is that in Sri Lanka, if you look at the history, there have been three major uprisings in 1971, in 88-89, and then the 30 war that ended up in 2009. Now, the main point I'm trying to make is because these protests, uprisings, and whatever happened, it happened in only one part of the country. The whole country didn't rise up against the government. And one part of Sri Lanka didn't understand what was going on the other side of Sri Lanka. And I think unless we overcome that situation, we will be in serious trouble. Probably the Tamil people understand this situation, and some of the Tamil-speaking people in the plantation sector, whom we identify as Malayah people, they have joined these protests, but they are also very cautious, because if the government starts hitting back and if the situation goes the other way, then they will be the non-majoritarian communities will be the hardest hit by the repression. So I would say protests will continue. Protests have been peaceful, but the government is trying to make them violent. And if you look at several incidents that happened recently, I mean, if you look at the emergency that was declared by the emergency recently, they had to withdraw emergency, not because they like to withdraw the emergency, because of the political pressure that was created by the protests, the developing political situation, there was some part of the government MPs, they moved to opposition. But I think that is a ploy employed by the government. Whatever it is, they don't have the two-thirds majority in the government. So they couldn't extend the emergency. They couldn't take up the emergency declaration, which needs to be approved by the parliament. They couldn't get through. They couldn't get it through. So that is why they allowed they say they withdrew emergency. Now, what I'm cautioning is that during the Mirihana protest, you know, where people surrounded the president's house, there was a provocation led by, I strongly suspect that was military intelligence and some of the 53rd Brigade that was recalled to Colombo from the north and east. And that was the brigade that committed the most human rights in the north and east. And those people were involved in setting up a bus on fire. And they arrested, I think, about 70 people. And they were tortured. And they were some of them were released by courts. But some of them are still in prison. And then during the protest in front of the parliament, or at the entrance of the road entering the parliament, there were huge protests. And what they did is they sent number plateless motorcycles to this is army intelligence and some of the paramilitary troops maybe. They came and the police checked them. I think there was no coordination between the police and this army intelligence or whatever the people that were sent to disrupt the protest. So the police who checked are in trouble now. And there are investigations going on to why those cycles were inspected, rather than taking the initiative to investigate why motorcycle number plate less armed people in motorbikes came to that protest. And this is happening everywhere. The situation is that I think at this moment, government has infiltrated some of the protest movement with government thugs, government henchmen, saboteurs, and so on. So unless the situation is led by proper leadership in Sri Lanka, situation could become a bloodbath. And that is very unfortunate. That will be the fourth bloodbath that would happen in Sri Lanka. And already United Nations Human Rights Council have warned about this situation. I think probably they are aware of the militarization and the situation is deteriorating very rapidly in that regard. But United Nations Human Rights Council, as we know, they can't do anything on the ground to safeguard human rights in countries like Sri Lanka.
Thanks, Lionel. You've actually given us a good answer as to what, you know, how the government has actually responded to these protests. There's been a lot of repression, and I was also reading about, you know, the social media blackout that, you know, was really designed to halt another day of anti-government demonstrations and also curfews. But, you know, I can just imagine what it's like, you know, with the presence of troops on the streets. And, you know, we've been hearing of things like police firing tear gas and, you know, to disperse students. But I think Ari wanted to have ask you a question as well.
Yeah, you've answered a lot of the stuff we were going to ask you, Lionel. It's been really good.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask, basically, what's the Sri Lankan left's response been to the situation? What's the left kind of been up to?
I mean, personally, I don't like to say this, but I would say it is pathetic.
That's a shame.
In the whole the situation is that the protests are led by independent groups, people who have come on their own. And there are protests led by groups like NPP, you know, and National People's Power, which is more or less an affiliation of the JVP in Sri Lanka. And then there is Frontline Socialist Party. They are also protesting. I am not saying they are away from these protests. They are staying away. But the problem is they are not coordinated. They are trying to gain their popularity, increase their strength through these protests, which is well and good. But the problem is that it doesn't serve at this moment the need of the country, the need of the working people. We have to bring these protests, coordinate them, bring them together, and make it anti-systemic, but it doesn't happen. They doesn't provide any leadership. They have become more or less onlookers of the developing situation. I think the government will make use of this situation to repress the left and any other opposition that will come up, and it will be very unfortunate. So we have been appealing to the left leadership, irrespective of who they are, to come forward, coordinate these protests. They should take the leadership of this at this moment. That is their role. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen.
Hmm. Yeah, thanks, Lionel. I was wondering also if you could tell us a bit about what the response of, you know, just ordinary Sri Lankan people are, you know, not necessarily people on the left, but, you know, what kind of movements have been involved. You and I were speaking about the union movement intervention. You know, is that sort of stronger after the government banned strikes by the healthcare workers amid the hospital crisis?
Yeah, well, from the working people's point of view, there have been many protests going on even before this crisis started, you know, sort of the current protest. There was a teacher strike, there were peasant people, the agricultural workers on strike, there were teachers on strike, there were students on strike. But the union movement has been very hesitant to come to the scene. I think it has become more wage centered, in the sense, you know, they are asking for more wages, more facilities, which is well and good. But I think at this moment, the union movement's involvement doesn't seem to be sufficient. I think what I heard is, I don't know exactly what happened. Yesterday, there was some sort of discussion. It was organized, it was coordinated by some independent union rather than affiliated with any party. I think the JVP trade union was the part of that discussion. I hope something will work out, because now the situation in Sri Lanka is that protests continue. Protests will gain momentum for the next week or so. And the government will try to turn the situation around, because the government expects that because it is coming to the rainy season, and that the hydro the reservoirs will become full, so they will be able to provide electricity on a more consistent basis. And then they are negotiating a loan from the IMF or whatever the facilities they could provide, and they expect, and they have appointed a team of experts, economic experts. I have high regard for these experts, because some of them have been in the progressive camp, but I don't know what they are going to do here in this situation, because, you know, sort of it has been the governor system that has brought up this situation, the situation to this crisis. And now, Indrajit Kumaraswamy and one of the Sri Lankan experts who was here in Melbourne, Dr. Nandalal Veerasinghe, he is appointed as the head of the central bank. And Professor Devarajan, a former World Bank expert, he has been called. And Dr. Indrajit Kumaraswamy, he is also an expert. He was part of the sort of a progressive people. You know, so they have been invited, and they are working on some sort of a package. I don't know what. But the issue is, are they going to turn around? The government is expecting things will turn around at the end of maybe in 2 weeks, at the end of this month. And when that situation comes, government will start hitting back. And that will be a massive repression. And that will be unprecedented, I would say, in terms of the scale of repression.
Well, thank you so much, Lionel. We just want to, you know, wrap up this interview, but you've given us a, you know, a very good overview of you know, the terrible situation that's happening in Sri Lanka. Is there anything that you'd like to say? Any concluding comments that you'd like to make? You know, if you know, tell us if you know of any solidarity actions that are happening that, you know, if people would like to support.
Yeah. I think during the last week, weekend especially, there were protests in expressed by the people. I would like to point out that most of these people who have been taking part in these protests have been the supporters of the government during the 2019 election.
Yes.
And Rajapaksa. And there were strong protests, I would say, in Melbourne, in Perth. And I think this weekend there is going to be protests in Sydney and so on. And we had a virtual global solidarity rally, which was attended by about 300 participants from all over the globe, which was very very effective, I would say. And there will be solidarity action continuing, and we are hoping that the 17th, 21st, that because 21st, I would like to remind, that was the Easter bombings anniversary. You know, it is the third, I think, from 2019. No, it's coming to the fourth year.
Yeah.
And there nothing has happened. So there will be some protest action taking place. At the moment, they have the people who are supporting, expressing solidarity with the people who have been victims of this Easter bombing. They have organized something in a church, but we want to organize an open protest. So there will be some sort of solidarity action that will be taking place in Sri Lanka, and already it is happening all over the globe, wherever the Sri Lankans are, I would say.
Mm.
That's right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Lionel, for coming on the show and telling us all about this sort of stuff. I think it's always...
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah.
And we appreciate your solidarity.
We'll be keeping in touch, and we'll be keeping our readers and listeners informed about what's happening in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Thank you.
See ya.
Thanks, Lionel. Bye.
Bye.